You're listening to the Nuff Said podcast, real strategies for customer success.
Hey everyone, this is Chris, co-founder of Nuff Said, and today on the Nuff Said podcast, I spoke with Dave Jackson, who just released his new book called Customer-Led Growth. And here's what we learned. First, customer-led growth companies measure themselves on what the customer is achieving, not internal metrics like NRR, GRR, NPS, et cetera. Companies that successfully build a customer-led model are rewarded with higher valuations. Customer-led growth has to be intentionally designed and comes from a deep understanding that we're serving people, not faceless customers. And the CEO will ultimately be responsible for making the change towards customer-led growth, but the customer leader can initiate that change. So that's the TLDR. Let's dive in.
Oh, hi, my name's Dave Jackson. I'm the chief exec of a company called TheCustomer.co. My background is I started a SaaS company back in 2000 before the term SaaS was invented. Led it, grew it through two liquidity events. And then since then, that was back in 2014, spend my time thinking, but then working with CEOs and CS leaders as a coach. Do a little bit of consulting and project work, and I've also done a few interim roles. Had a fascination with customers for so many years, it's unbelievable. I am older than I look, if that's possible. And just published a new book, which is called Customer-Led Growth, which I think is what led us to this podcast, Chris.
Great. And can you talk a little bit about the book? You know, for those of us that are looking for it, where can I find it? What's the name of the book? And why'd you write it?
So the book is called Customer-Led Growth. The subtitle is A CEO's Guide to Building a B2B SaaS Company. You can find it on Amazon. There's both a Kindle and a paperback edition. What led me to write it was it's part autobiographical, it's part philosophy, and it's part coach and advice. And I think the reason that I wrote it was because I'd got quite a lot of ideas and experiences and quite a lot of mistakes as well. And I wanted to put them into some sort of coherent framework so that I could understand them better, what they meant individually as ideas, but also more importantly, how they fit together. So that's what started the book off. I started off thinking about it as a book for CS. But then a friend of mine had a look at it, a guy called Rav Dhaliwal, and said, you know, look, this is good content, but it's the wrong audience. The only people that can make the difference in this real context, in the context of thinking of customer success as a company-wide capability, are CEOs. So the book is several months late, and it's all down to Rav Dhaliwal. It's his fault.
Good. We'll make sure to call him out in the podcast. So, okay, fine. So let's go ahead and start with the basics. What is customer-led growth?
Customer-led growth to me is fundamentally an approach on how a SaaS company is built. And the way that I describe it in simple terms is it is everything an organization does to profitably win, satisfy, retain, and grow its chosen customers better than the competition. And each part of that matters. So it is everything the organization does. It's not just about what a CS team does. It's an organization-wide capability. And that's where the philosophy bit comes in. To profitably, because at some point in time, you either have to have a way of making money, making profit, or at least be able to show a path to doing that. Otherwise, you're going to go bust sooner rather than later. Win, satisfy, retain, and grow. It's not just about post-sale. It's the whole end-to-end customer life cycle. Chosen customers. You cannot be all things to all people. So being crystal clear about what customers you are choosing to serve, and by definition, what customers you are choosing not to serve, is an important piece. And then the final bit is better than the competition. And the competition in my book is not, it is other people that may supply something similar, but the biggest form of competition that most SaaS businesses have got is demand for time and investment. Because as a CEO, you know, Chris, you can spend your money doing lots of things. Unfortunately, money's not a bottomless pit, and time and focus and resource is not a bottomless pit. You have to choose where you spend it. So quite often competition is not, oh, there's a supplier that does this better. It's, no, actually, I think I can spend my money better elsewhere. And that's why it goes to the right to the beginning of the pipeline. Because part of that is convincing people that you've got a problem that you solve that's important to them, and you can give them a better return than investing their time and money elsewhere. So that's what it means to me.
In the investment community, this concept of product-led growth is all the rage right now. You know, yeah. the idea that, you know, you build a great product that solves a problem. It's easy for an individual user or a small group to adopt the product. Mm-hmm. And then it kind of grows and scales from there. How would customer-led growth differ? And I think specifically a product-led growth CEO might say something like, great, you know, the customers that are using it are self-selecting. They're the ones that stick around using the product. And yeah. we only survive if we deliver value. So how would a customer-led growth mindset differ from a product-led growth mindset?
I don't think they do, actually, Chris. I don't see the two as conflicting or contradictory. I think product-led growth is more a delivery strategy for how you deliver customer-led growth. So you could take the same principles and apply them in what other people would call a sales-led growth organization, which is typically, and what they mean by that is investing my money in people in sales and marketing. If you look at product-led, typically what they're doing is investing their money in product to build the acquisition and retention cycles. So I don't see them as contradictory. And I think too often we stick a label on something and say it's that or that. Now, is there a difference in how you spend your money? Yes, there is. And do I believe that product-led is a very valid strategy? Yes, I do. For two reasons. One is because if you spend your money well and you really understand your customers, which is part of being customer-led, then you can build a delivery vehicle which scales much more effectively. So one of the chapters in the book is the title of the chapter is Code Scales Better Than People.
Nice.
But you can be product-led and customer-led. And the other reason I think that product-led is a very interesting concept and approach is because I think more and more and more people are looking for a self-service option first. So I think it's got a lovely balance that says, you know, I think the very best product-led growth companies are actually customer-led. They just choose a particular delivery vehicle. And part of being customer-led is recognizing that actually quite often we don't want somebody to give us a call. You know, it's like, I just want to go and solve this problem myself. And I do think a lot of what gets done under the name of customer success is I need to speak to a customer. Why? Well, they need my help. Have you asked them? Actually, I think what we do is that we want the reassurance that customers like us, not that they want to talk to us. I had the same conversation with the CEO about quarterly business reviews. And he said, what should we do on quarterly business reviews? I said, scrap them. How many of your customers have asked you for a quarterly business review? How many suppliers have they got that want quarterly business reviews? How much time of that does it take up? And we just, you know, we fall into this, that's what we did in the past model. And that's not the way that my head works.
In a customer-led growth model, did the North Star metrics change at all?
Well, it depends what you mean by North Star metrics, Chris. Tell me a bit more about what you mean by North Star metric.
I'm thinking for if you compare a company that does run itself via the philosophy of customer-led growth and a company that doesn't, how do they measure themselves differently?
I think in a true customer-led growth company, North Star metrics relate to what the customer is achieving. So there's a piece in the book, there's a piece of research but there's a conversation about customer success metrics from a group of CS leaders. And, you know, and they were asked what were the key CS metrics, NRR, GRR, NPS, customer success qualified leads. None of those have got anything to do with customer success. They're all measures of company success. Do they matter? Yes. Would I track them? Absolutely. But what's missing is how many customers are we delivering value to? How much value are we delivering to customers? So I don't think it's a different set. I think customer-led growth has probably got a superset, and that, you know, the missing piece is quite often how customers measure and perceive value and how we're achieving that for them, with them.
Yeah, I love that. That really is the difference. What metrics outside of internal metrics are we using to understand what the customer's perspective, their opinion and their experience has been with the value received by your product or service?
Yeah. So I've been doing some work recently with a company and I think there's a very close relationship between the value that customers achieve and the propensity to retain and grow revenue with that customer. We all talk about value being the fundamental, but you know, unless you can actually measure that, how can you really say I'm focused on customer value? So part of what the book talks about is, you know, just, you've got to really get into a really deep understanding of your chosen customers. And by the way, this again has got nothing to do with the companies that you serve, really. People talk about ideal customer profiles, but that's a small piece. The companies that you target are only a small piece. And we hide behind this thing, what I call the faceless customer. All the time, we are dealing with people. So I'm selling to individuals. And it, often it's not an individual, it is multiple individuals. And if they buy, I am supporting and enabling multiple individuals. All of whom, by the way, have got different needs, expectations, measures, understanding and perception of value. So being customer-led, to my mind, is actually, in a way, being people-led, in that I need to understand what each of these people need from me. So the, you know, the missing thing in many ICPs is really detailed, and I do mean detailed, role profiles. Who are they? What do they worry about? How are they measured? What does their boss expect of them? What keeps them awake at night? Where do they go for help and assistance? What do they expect of our product? How, you know, can we help? How can we help them improve all of that? I think what that does is it breaks it down, that says, you know, this concept of a singular outcome doesn't apply in that space. Because I actually have to think about not an outcome, but actually what's the next step. So if I'm, you know, if Chris, if you're one of my customers, what I want to know is, yeah, maybe what's your long-term goal, but how can I help you get to the next step and the next step and the next step and the next step? So this whole process of delivering value becomes an iterative, and it's driven as much by your context, which, by the way, will change. Just in a couple of weeks' time, somebody's going to come to you and say, Chris, we've got this problem. We need to rethink what we're doing. COVID did that in spades, but that happens in perhaps a slightly less impactful way all the time. So you stop thinking about a success plan and you start thinking about delivering little pockets of value to individuals regularly and iteratively.
And before I move on to the next topic, Dave, I think the last question here is, why name it customer-led growth as opposed to customer value-led growth?
Probably because customer-led growth sounds better. The core of what a SaaS business does is identify a group of customers to serve, figure out how they take them through different stages, and figure out what value means at each one of those stages. So I don't see a real difference between customer value and led and customer led. I know other people may do that, but not sure I see that difference.
Yeah, on my LinkedIn, what do you call it? The subheader, I've had customer led growth for years, and people have challenged me, why isn't customer value led growth? And I think I very much feel the same way as you, which is there's not actually a big difference in the end. If we're focused on the customer, we're focused on the value that they're getting.
Yeah. And I would say, actually, if you're focused on the customer, you have to be focused on the value as well, by definition.
By definition, agreed. So you talk about, in your book, you talk about customer success being a financial strategy. And I think people who are listening to this podcast are not used to talking to their org about their role, their department, as a financial strategy. So can you talk about what does that mean and how does that impact a customer leader?
What it means is, if you really start to understand what company-wide customer success capability looks like, then you start to recognize that it plays into lots and lots of different aspects of the company. So if you really understand value in the eyes of individuals, you are better able to position selling, marketing, content. So there's a productivity, there's a CAC perspective to it. You are better able to deliver value productively. There is a retention element to it. There is a growth element in terms of expansion revenue, because if you think about value delivery and revenue, it's a bit like a double helix of DNA. And you start with this, with the thread of this helix, which is, I call value. value enablement. And if you think about the, if you can picture double helix in mind, you know, you start with this value piece and I add a piece of value, that's a bond. I add another piece of value, that's another bond. The other side of that helix is that bond creates a relationship to revenue. So by adding this value, I strengthen the case for retention. By adding this value, I strengthen the case for retention. By adding this value, I can strengthen the case for retention. By adding this value, I actually require you to buy something else. That's an upsell opportunity. So all the time, it's you know, by focusing on delivering value to customers, you are increasing the propensity to retain and you're increasing the likelihood of upsell opportunities. That's a revenue thing. Effectively, what you're doing is growing the top line number, but you're also growing the bottom. So you're shrinking the bottom line number because you're becoming much more productive because you are focused much more tightly on individuals and what they need and how you can deliver that. And there is some work to do in tuning the engine to get that. That's the heart of a B2B SaaS financial strategy. That's why NRR is the increasingly the strongest predictor of company valuation. And I think understanding what that means, and by the way, I've met CEOs that don't understand that, not just CS leaders. And I think explaining that across the organization is an important piece.
So in your book, you have a chapter called Customer Success as a Financial Strategy. And I think in that chapter, you have one of the most important figures in the entire book, which is a chart that's kind of two axes. The horizontal axis is the company's net retention rate. Yep. And on the vertical axis is the company's enterprise value, EV multiples. Yeah, so the valuation that the company receives. And there appears to be a very strong correlation between retention rate and the company's valuation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it is just that, look, the SaaS model is very powerful because it's predictable, right? Investors love predictability. They don't like surprises. So if you have built a strong delivery engine, and by delivery engine, I mean delivering of leads, delivering of converted deals, delivering of retention, delivering of growth, then you've got this, it's beautifully repeatable. And I know one organization that understands the correlation between the value that the company receives from their product, the improvement in the financial performance of their customer and the improvement in their financial performance. So NRR actually tracks back to how effectively can we deliver value to our chosen customers. And the other thing, of course, if you do it right, you've got the productivity element to it. How much money do we spend in acquiring customers that we lose? We call them bad fit customers in CS. Well, that's not a CS problem, it's a company problem. And you only get that by starting to think about, go back to that definition. How do I win, satisfy, retain, and grow my chosen customers? And in those two things, you've got the basis of some fundamental frameworks. Ideal customer profile, a single end-to-end customer lifecycle, and an understanding of what value means across each of those stages. And you don't need to do it all in detail at the top level. You paint that picture and you say to people, you know, here's the canvas, paint in this picture.
So this book, you know, the subtitle is How CEOs Can Run. Actually, I should read it. the subtitle is A CEO's Guide to Building a B2B SaaS Company. Obviously, yeah. You know, customer success leaders can get tons of value out of this book in structuring and helping the company rethink its design. What are other key takeaways from your book that you might want a CS audience to hear?
Well, we've covered a couple. So I think the keys are, one is, you know, let's focus on people, not this faceless customer. And let's understand how that drives a need to change the way that we think about and deliver value. I think the second is, let's better understand the relationship between value and revenue. So one of the chapters in the book is called Success is Selling. There's a guy who's the CEO at Wistia, Chris Savage. Again, the quote's in the book. But to paraphrase, he basically says, what we do with prospects is help them understand their problems and how they can address them. What we do with customers is help them understand and address their problems and resolve them. It's the same process. It's just that one we do with prospects, one we do with customers that we've won. And there's a podcast I know that you'll know and that others will know. It's called Helping Sells. And that's a great example, you know, helping sells, but selling doesn't help. So part of, you know, what I talk about in the book is how do you bring that helping mentality, that understanding of value and delivering value into the marketing and sales process? And that comes from understanding the individuals. And I think the third piece is, and the reason that it moved towards being a book for CEOs is that this only happens with intent. It doesn't happen accidentally. So I think one of the key roles of the chief exec is that of chief organization designer. And that's not about lines and boxes. It is about vision and values, fundamental frameworks, core metrics, and then how you enable the organization to do that. Arthur Jones, I think an American who said, all organizations are perfectly designed to achieve the results they do. And you only change the results if you change the way that the organization works.
You also mentioned that great CCOs behave more like a business leader over a department leader. Can you talk a little bit about that perspective as well?
Yeah, I think, and I go back to my experience as a CEO of a SaaS company. And I remember being quite frustrated at times when good people, I mean, people I've got a lot of respect for would come to exec team meetings and they'd be arguing for what was right for their team. But sometimes it wasn't right for the business at that point in time. And I think any member of the exec team, whether it's a CCO, a chief marketing officer, chief revenue officer, chief finance officer, when you come to that table, you come as a member of the executive team. And you're a business leader first and a department leader second. And you've got to think about how can I do the right thing for the business? And sometimes that might mean foregoing your favorite projects because there are other things that are more pressing. And I think what I tried to do in the book is explain, you know, what I think the CEO perspective of this is, in that it is about how I get the whole organization to work together. You know, collaboration is one of the most important things in an organization that never appears on any org chart. So I think, you know, stepping outside your own narrow departmental boundary, important though that is, and thinking about the business. And I think actually people in CS are well placed to do that because they see not just their own problems, but they see issues and opportunities that, you know, marketing, sales, product. We all talk about, you know, having good relationships with these and alignment. And I guess my first thought is, well, alignment's good, but what if we could design an organization, you know, where post-pitting alignment wasn't a necessary thing? It was actually built into the design of the org. So I think it's good for CS leaders. Apart from anything else, some good ideas. I would like to think some good ideas, practical ideas, but also sit in the shoes of your boss.
And that's it for this week's episode of Nuff Said. To learn more about Nuff Said's proactive intelligence platform, you can visit nuffsaid.com. That's nuffsaid.com. And you can follow Nuff Said on LinkedIn. To tune in to more real customer success strategies, head over to your podcast platform of choice and make sure you're subscribed. Thanks for tuning in. Nuff Said.